There's a price to pay when you confront the culture.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, this is Michael Brown. Welcome to the Line of Fire broadcast. Great to be with you. I'm not taking any calls today. We're going to be getting into a bunch of really interesting video clips and talking about what happens when we, as followers of Jesus, confront the culture around us. I don't mean hate speech, anger, intimidation. God forbid, I don't mean violence. But when we speak up, when we speak out, when we shine as lights in dark places, there's a price to pay for confronting the culture. It's a reason that many pastors and leaders avoid it. Now, one reason they avoid it is they think, well, I just need to teach the scripture and encourage my flock and protect them from error and reach out to those in our community that are hurting and in need. Of course, that's a great job of a shepherd and a great function of the church. But we live in this world, a confused, messed up world. Our kids are dealing with all kinds of confusing signals from schools and social media and media. We're confronted with all kinds of problems, issues in the workplace. The universities are going in a very different direction with their agenda. If we don't speak, if we don't confront the culture, who will? When Jesus said to his followers, "You are the salt of the earth," one of the functions of salt was to preserve and to bring flavor. You could say that we are the conscience of the society. He said, if the salt has lost its saltiness, well, what good is it? What good is it? It's just going to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. When we are not making the difference we are supposed to make, we just get ignored and mocked as being irrelevant. He said, you are the light of the world. The city set on a hill cannot be hidden. That's why, by the way, our scandals, our shortcomings are broadcast for the world to see, because we're like a city set on a hill. And the great problem in America, as you've heard me say over and again, is not so much the presence of darkness, but the absence of light. The old saying, you don't curse the darkness, you light a candle. But when you light a candle in the dark, not everyone will appreciate that. All right, before I get into some of these clips, tell you about some of my own journey, and then talk about what got stirred up when we confronted and exposed BLM leaders calling on spirits of the dead. Yeah, we'll get into all that. First, a shout out to everyone watching on the America's Voice channel, on Dish TV, on Pluto TV. If that's you right now, you're watching one of our daily live radio internet broadcasts that we are specially tailoring for you watching on Saturday night on America's Voice or elsewhere, different time online. So if that's you, I want you to take a moment and shoot a note to our website, because we want to give you two free ebooks. So go to my website right now, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and you'll see there, sign up for the emails. So when you do that, you automatically get a really neat, eye-opening ebook, 7 Secrets of the Real Messiah. That's for everyone. So if you're not on our email list, go and get on that. You'll find out about our daily op-ed pieces, our daily videos, and great material that'll help equip you. But when you fill out the form and it says, how did you find out about the website? Click on Other, and then type in America's Voice. When you do, we will also send you an extra free ebook, a mini book, 5 Ways to Pray for America. Okay, a couple of weeks ago, I was asked on short notice to join Pastor Rob McCoy on his nightly broadcast that he has been doing for many weeks now, Fireside Chats, and he with some of his team members there. Pastor McCoy is coming to national attention with his church services, saying, hey, we're going on, we're going to meet, you can find us, but we're going to meet, this is a First Amendment right, etc. And he has also served as a city mayor, city council member, so he's been actively involved in politics. And he was talking about how the SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, went after me some years ago. Listen to the dialogue.
the last person I would want to debate and contend with is you. I've seen you debate. You're vicious in a sweet way. You just disarm people.
Way. I like that.
you're vicious in a sweet way. You disarm people, and then you just smother them with facts.
Yeah.
And your grasp of the topic is hard to contend with. So I imagine that you are doing your best to enlighten him. And I love the fact that you're a bridge builder. I mean, you're a Messianic Jew. You're considered by some in the Southern Poverty Law Center and others to be anti-Semitic, which couldn't be any further from the truth. I just read some of these things, and it baffles me that people can put that in writing.
The SPLC went after me years ago as allegedly anti-gay, which then became anti-LGBTQ. So I got on their hate list. I was one of the 30 new leaders of the radical right. And so first, it actually made my night when a friend asked me about it. I had just had this tremendous sense of joy and affirmation from the Lord, knowing it was opposition for righteousness' sake. And then I called them on the carpet publicly in terms of truth, and never got a response from them, even reaching out to them privately. But they continue to discredit themselves, the SPLC.
Yeah.
They branded the ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom, which has won numerous Supreme Court cases, as one of the most respected legal organizations in America. They branded them a hate group and others, and they've shown very clear double standards, et cetera.
Now the SPLC, Southern Poverty Law Center, once did really good work and exposed hate groups, legitimate hate groups, and KKK and those kinds of things. They did good work decades ago, but then they shifted further and further to the left. So Christian conservatives now made their way onto the hate list, and fine Christian ministry organizations, I mean, nationally respected American Family Association, got branded as hate groups to this day. So you go to Amazon and you want to make a donation through Amazon and designate a charitable organization to get a certain percentage of sales. And Amazon's done that with hundreds and hundreds of organizations. So ADF, no, you can't give to ADF. Why? Because they're a hate group. Family Research Council, branded a hate group. I mean, this is some of the dangerous work they're doing and the double standards involved. If you are a Muslim exposing Muslim extremism and Muslim terror, you could be branded a hater. So I got on the list. I just want you to understand that when you stand for righteousness, you will be opposed. When you expose gay activism in our schools, you'll be opposed. You can be loving, gracious, caring about individuals, saying, but I differ with this being taught to my children. That doesn't matter. You'll be branded a hater. So it was back in 2012, and I want you to see this. So the Southern Poverty Law Center actually has this page, and here's what the page says. It's got me listed here. And it's got 30 new activists heading up the radical, the radical right. All right. So this is from May of 2012. The last decade has seen major changes in the American radical right. What was once a world largely dominated by a few relatively well-organized groups has become a scene populated by large numbers of smaller, weaker groups, with only a handful led by the kind of charismatic chieftains that characterized the 1990s. I guess I'm one of the charismatic chieftains. The last decade has seen major changes in the American radical right. What was once a world largely dominated by a few. So go through that. And it says this. There's been explosive growth in several sectors of the radical right, especially in the last few years, much of it driven by anger over the diminishing white majority and the severe dislocations caused by a still ailing economy. An anti-Muslim movement, almost entirely ginned up by political opportunists and hardline Islamophobes, has grown enormously since taking off in 2010 when reported anti-Muslim hate crimes went up by 50%. During the same time frame, a number of religious right anti-gay groups, enraged and on the defensive as swelling majorities of Americans dropped their opposition to same-sex marriage and other LGBT rights, have grown extraordinarily vicious in their propaganda. And it goes on. So that's how everything is couched. We are angry. We're angry that we're losing our domination and these other groups are rising. So here's a list of different leaders, and Christian historian David Barton is on there, and there is Michael L. Brown. Yeah. Oh, who else on the list? David Duke, well-known, unapologetic, anti-Semite. David Duke, former Grand Wizard of the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. I'm on the same list with him. I'm on the same list with Malik Zulu Shabazz, a former leader of the New Black Panthers. with other neo-Nazis and white supremacists, and also fine Christian brothers that are on that list. So I, when a friend told me I was on the SPLC hate list, I literally had I jumped for joy on the inside. I counted it a badge of honor because I knew it wasn't for being nasty. It wasn't for being mean-spirited. It wasn't for insulting people and calling them names and railing on them like some rabid fundamentalist. No, it was for exposing gay activist curricula in schools. It was for expressing my difference with the idea that two men or two women could have something that was called a marriage in God's sight. It was for speaking the truth in love. And Jesus said that when we're persecuted for righteousness, we should rejoice. And listen, I have friends of mine, colleagues, people I've known over the years who have literally been persecuted for the faith, meaning put in prison, meaning stoned, people hurling stones at them till they're bleeding from their head and their hand, meaning tortured for their faith. There are people that I have personally worked with in ministry and helped send them out to preach who have been killed in different countries. I can't even mention some of the places because we still have workers there, killed for preaching the gospel. So getting on somebody's hate list, getting discredited, getting defamed, getting barred, getting blocked, getting banned, hey, that's the least we could do. That's the least we could experience. So I just want to tell you candidly, I don't feel sorry for you when you're unfriended for sharing an important article about righteousness. I don't feel bad for you. I don't feel bad for you when people post nasty things in response to a scripture that you post. Oh, listen, I know many of you are sensitive and you care about people and you want to be a friend and you want to be loving. But Jesus said we'd be rejected. Jesus said we'd be hated. In fact, he was hated to the point of being nailed to a cross. And if he said, if that's how they treated him, the master of the household, how will we, the servants of the household, be treated? So let's not fall into some pity part. Poor me, I got unfriended. We're worried about losing our friends on social media, whereas our brothers and sisters around the world are literally losing their heads for the gospel and not denying Jesus. So let's have the strength of soldiers. Let's stand up and be courageous. Let's determine we're not going to be nasty, mean-spirited, or fight with worldly weapons, but we're going to speak the truth in love. We will not be moved. We will not be deterred. We will move forward. We will expose darkness. All right, we are just getting started. No calls today, but we'll be right back.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So what happens when you speak the truth in love? What happens when you flip the light on when everyone has gotten accustomed to the darkness? What happens when you confront error? What happens when you are the one that is branded the hater? You are the one who's branded the homophobe, the transphobe, the racist, the xenophobe, simply because you love righteousness. People will mischaracterize you. You just have to accept that. People will lie about you. You get your message out. You speak the truth. You leave the rest to God. But just understand, you will be misrepresented. You will be spoken against. Jesus himself, it was prophesied over him in his birth, Luke 2, that he was to be a sign spoken against, that the thoughts of many hearts would be revealed. When you bring the truth to light, you find out where people really stand. So it's not just the SPLC that put me on their list. And by the way, reached out to them every way I knew how, didn't respond, exposed their error publicly, didn't respond. They actually had Dr. Ben Carson on their hate list for a little while. Yeah, Dr. Ben Carson. And then Bill O'Reilly, when he was on Fox, drew attention to it, and then they backed away. I wrote and said, hey, you owe me an apology to you. Apologize to Ben Carson. You owe me an apology. And they pulled my data years ago because they really could not legitimately classify me as a hater, but I'm still on that list. Even though you click on my name, it doesn't go anywhere. I'm still on that list, which, again, it's for me a badge of honor. So there's another group called GLAAD, started as the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. I call them the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Disagreement, because that's really what they opposed. And they put out something called the Commentator Accountability Project, called CAP, Commentator Accountability Project. And yes, I'm on that list as well, listed as head of the Coalition of Conscience, frequent speaker on the conservative circuit, and author of A Queer Thing Happened to America. And then it's got quotes of all the horrible things I've allegedly said. You say, well, those are actual quotes. Yeah, in context, they're all quotes I stand for 100%. But they will try to represent them as if I am leader of a hate group and spreading hate. So you say, well, what's CAP? What's the Commentator Accountability Project? Well, Commentator Accountability Project was GLAAD, which is very influential behind the scenes. And they don't even call themselves anymore Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. They're just GLAAD. They don't even refer to it as an acronym anymore, just GLAAD. But they'll be working behind the scenes with major networks. You don't have enough gay characters represented here. It's not strong enough representation. It's not equal here. You need more of this, more of that. They remain very influential. So they started this. I was on their initial list of 36. So I made it on their first list. It's expanded since then. But again, my great honor. And this is simply for talking about God's model for marriage and family and sexuality with compassion, saying Jesus died for all of us the same. We're all created in God's image the same. And we all need mercy. We're all a broken, fallen race. We all need God's mercy and redemption, every single one of us. Yet, marriage is a union of a man and woman, not two men, not two women. The world's best mother is not a father, etc. So this makes me, quote, a hater. So be it. So what GLAAD did was this. They reached out to all the major networks and said, do not have these people on. Do not have them on. Me or Tony Perkins, whoever else. Do not have them on. If you're discussing these issues about sexuality and relationship and or gays in the military, whatever it is, do not have these people on because they will pollute. They will mess people up. They will spread misinformation. They're haters. Don't have them on. So much for equal dialogue. So when I'm asked to go to a campus, and do a lecture on can you be gay and Christian, or do a lecture on Israel's right, does Israel have a right to homeland, whatever. My request is, or is Jesus the Jewish Messiah, whatever the controversial subject is, my request is, can you find a professor on campus or someone involved in one of the groups that is an able representative or someone in the community that can be brought in to have a debate with me? My preference is that we have a debate and that both sides are presented and we can cross-examine each other and the audience can ask us questions. You say, well, why not just present your view? Because I want someone to challenge it, and I want to challenge theirs. Let's put it out there on the table. GLAAD saying, no, 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 we only want one side presented. If I was going on the air and I had an opportunity to just go on by myself or to have a major debate with a leader from the other side, I'd say, oh, please bring them on. As long as we get equal time, please bring them on. I want things to be brought into the light. I want to be able to challenge the error. And I want someone to be able to challenge me so I can defend the truth. That's always my preference. That's always my desire. When I do my daily talk radio show, I'm not taking calls today, but I constantly ask critics and dissenters to call in. They rarely do, but I constantly do. We invite critics and dissenters to come on. Very few take our invitation. So GLAAD, and they've probably been effective in getting voices like me off some of the major networks. So be it. We'll get the message out. And then the HRC, the world's largest gay activist organization, Human Rights Campaign, I mean, big enough that they'd have people no less than President Obama speak at their annual fundraising event, that they would actually host presidential debates. So a few years ago, I was invited to Portugal to Peru. I was invited to Peru to give a presentation to congressional leaders and university chancellors as to what happens when you normalize same-sex relations in a society and legalize gay, quote, marriage. I was asked just to go and give a presentation there, which I did. And as a result of that, I got on the HRC list as one of those exporting hate. So they actually put out, this is not a video that we doctored. This is their video. Check out the music and everything. Exporting hate. Oh, yeah. There exists a network of American extremists. Michael Brown, there I am. Hate.
For a man to lie with a man is contrary to what God intended.
The unspoken mantra of gay activists for many years has been, you will be delegitimized if you do not embrace, accept, and celebrate homosexuality.
If I say Jesus didn't condemn homosexuality, do I therefore justify pedophilia because Jesus didn't condemn pedophilia?
I have an issue with two men marrying or two women marrying. Can someone understand that the world's best mommy is not a good daddy?
Oh, the thought of it. The thought of it. A monster like me exporting those views around the world. This is, yes, I'm being sarcastic. And hey, bottom line, the world's best mommy is not a daddy, and the world's best daddy is not a mommy. And the ideal environment, the best environment for a child to be raised to give them the best chance to thrive is with their mother and their father in a healthy, long-term committed relationship. That is, it's been proven and demonstrated in thousands of articles and studies and all kinds of data that supports it from every angle. But no, to say that is being hateful. And when you use the argument from silence, well, when did Jesus condemn homosexuality by name? My point is not to compare homosexuality to pedophilia, but to expose a faulty argument to say, well, when did he condemn pedophilia by name? When did he condemn wife beating by name? You just go down with a long list. The fact that he did not condemn a specific thing by name doesn't mean it's okay. And of course, in different ways, Jesus clearly tells us God's model is one man, one woman together for life, and that all sexual acts committed outside of that are in violation of God's will and defile us. But see, this is, again, what happens when you speak up. There's a quote when I was on Piers Morgan years ago with a panel there. They've got me quiet. I stand by that quote. It's biblical. It's truthful. And if you love people, you speak the truth. But you see, long before the cancel culture had risen up in recent years, the seeds of it have been here for years and years and years. And there have been attempts to marginalize those of us who speak to controversial cultural issues. You think everyone's going to pat you on the back when you expose the evils of abortion, even with great compassion for the women involved and the families involved in reaching out? You think people are going to thank you? Here, if you've never done this, go join a sidewalk prayer council group outside of an abortion clinic, okay? Notice the demeanor. Notice the graciousness of the group. I don't know if you're with a good Christian group. Their graciousness, their love, their concern, they're worshiping, they're praying, they're offering to speak to people, pray with people, pay for them to get an ultrasound, whatever it is. And you watch the cars drive by. You watch grandmothers rolling down their window and cursing you out with the worst profanity. You watch Satanists, atheists, witches, lesbians gather together and denounce you as evil. You think what we're doing is trying to save the lives of the unborn and offer life. But when you stand against the spirit of the age, there will be opposition. I've got a clip I want to play for you, and we'll do it on the other side of the break. But again, I want to set this up. We have been saying for weeks and weeks and weeks now, that when you look and see rioting, looting, burning of buildings, violent acts, that is from below, not from above. That is the spirit of anarchy. That is lawlessness. That is rebellion. It's very different from grief over the death of George Floyd. That is very different from concern about unequal opportunities of education for kids in the inner city. That is very different than reviewing the horrible history of our past with slavery and segregation and asking, are there scars of that still remain in our culture? No, this is something totally different. And the profound difference is where this is coming from. One can come from legitimate grief, concern, desire to see righteousness, equity. The other comes from below. In that sense, it is demonic. In that sense, it is hellish. And it is clearly destructive. But it goes deeper than that. There is a deeper spiritual battle. We've talked about it on the air. We've been exposing it. And now our exposing it has gotten the attention of Right Wing Watch, which is a notorious group, ultra, ultra left. I've often been featured on their website. In fact, sometimes I'll be doing a broadcast and say, hey, Right Wing Watch, if you're listening to this is a good clip to pull.
because obviously they'll mock us for taking a stand. So be it. We will get the message out. All right, we'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for tuning in to The Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown. And once again, a shout out to all of our friends just joining us, getting to know us on the America's Voice Network. You can't call in right now. This is a pre-recorded show. We do live daily radio where folks can call in. But we're not taking any calls today. But if you're watching this on a Saturday night on Dish TV, on Pluto TV, on America's Voice Network, or perhaps just watching online with America's Voice at one of their different outlets, we'd love to hear from you. And we'd love to send you some free gifts to read that will really be eye-opening and helpful. So here's what you do. Again, if you're watching now on America's Voice, go to our website, askdrbrown.org. And you just see where you can fill in your email and submit that. What that means is you'll be notified of all the new videos we put out every week, all the new articles we put out every week, special resources that we make available. When you do, you'll automatically get a free copy of a mini book. It represents many years of study, but it's condensed in a mini book, Seven Secrets of the Real Messiah. Whether you're Jewish, Christian, or agnostic, atheist, I think you'll find it a fascinating read. And then, also, when you fill out how you found out about the website, so you click on the bottom, click Other, and type in America's Voice, we'll also send you another free mini book, Five Ways to Pray for America. All right, so a couple weeks back, I was with Pastor Rob McCoy, a politically involved pastor in California, knows the Word of God, loves the community around him, and is urging Christians to get involved in a righteous, godly way in the political scene. So this is a discussion we were having. It was a Sunday night discussion that he hosted with some of his team. Let's go back to that talk.
So when the BLM thing started back in 2016, I wrote an article saying we must separate the BLM movement from real civil rights issues. We must separate BLM movement from saying that Black Lives Matter. You say, well, why do we even need to say Black Lives Matter? Because in much of American history to this day, many Black Americans feel their lives haven't mattered. So I said, let's shout it from the rooftop. Yes, Black Lives Matter, but the BLM movement, we separate ourselves from. Now that this has grown into a national phenomenon, we've opened it up even more. I don't even refer to them as the Black Lives Matter movement. I just call them BLM. I'm not even gonna dignify this Black Lives Matter with their movement. When you go to the website, of course, you notice that the three founders are all radical feminists, admittedly trained Marxists. Two of them openly identify as queer. All of your viewers know by now that they've openly said we want to disrupt the Western nuclear family. When I dug into the statement even further, I noticed strikingly that the word father never occurred once. Mother isn't mentioned, parents are mentioned, but father never once. And then more recently, it surfaced that some of the leaders in the movement talk about calling on spirits of the dead when they say his name, you know, say George Floyd or say this name. When you say the name, you're also calling on the person to come forth, for those spirits to come forth and empower the movement. So it's basically witchcraft. And you think this whole thing is very Jezebelic in that regard, in terms of joining together radical feminism, attack on gender, attack on family structure, emasculating men, and then you bring in the appeal to the spirits of the dead. So I have been warning people for months, separate from the movement. It is anarchist. It is antichrist. Do not show your solidarity with Black friends in different ways where you see injustice confronted, but separate from the movement. And we began to warn about this. Not long after that, they started burning Bibles in Portland. And I tweeted, okay, not what's next, but who's next. Sure enough, next weekend, they tried to burn police alive in the police precinct. So we need to expose this for what it is. It's from below, not from above.
So what happened was Right Wing Watch saw that clip and gave a report of it on their website. So when you go to their website and you look at what they posted there, it's a fairly full report. right? So the Right Wing Watch website does not take any comments, okay? So that just posts what happened and gives quotes from the talk that are representative quotes. But then their Facebook page is different. Their Facebook page, you can add comments. So when you go to the Right Wing Watch Facebook page, it says anti-LGBTQ activist and author Michael Brown calls the Black Lives Matter movement antichrist. He says 4 more years of Trump will give the church time to usher in revival and awakening. And then a link to their site. And then beneath my picture, Michael Brown says BLM calling out names of the dead is witchcraft. Ah, okay. Now, number one, the statement I made about Trump was in the context of 4 more years of Donald Trump will not save America. At best, it would be like a human wedge stuck in the door before it collapses completely, where the church can get about doing what it's called to do, stirring revival, awakening, Great Commission. Because other than that, America's heading off a cliff. I mean, it's that urgent. It's that real. It's that intense. So that's the situation in which we find ourselves. But what really got the attention of folks there was me mentioning about BLM leaders calling out spirits of the dead and calling it witchcraft, by which I meant you are looking to other powers, demonic powers, other than the power of God to have influence and to be empowered by these other spirits to do a particular work and ultimately to cultivate anarchy in the society. That's from below, not from above. That's witchcraft rather than the Holy Spirit. And many of the leaders involved in radical feminists and others openly identify as witches. They mean it in different ways, but they openly identify as witches, as I documented in my book, Jezebel's War with America. Now, my colleague at American Family Radio, American Family Association, Abe Hamilton, himself a black man, a lawyer and pastor, was the one that brought to national attention BLM leaders calling on spirits of the dead. Then I played some of those clips on my radio show and then talked about it on the air. So what kind of responses did this get? So I went through the comments on the Facebook page. And what was interesting was people didn't have a problem. I'd say 98% of those interacting there, which would be followers of Right Wing Watch and for the most part ultra left, that 98% of them had no problem with the idea of calling on the spirits of the dead. They had a problem with me exposing it and calling it witchcraft. Here, let me read some of the quotes from there. All right. Oh, let's see here. All right, here's some of the more passionate posts. When you make a racist lose his mind like this, you know BLM supporters are doing it right. Or how about this? Great Caesar's ghost. He is insane. And this. So fighting for equality is satanic now? If that's the case, then I'm a Satanist. And then these morons should have to work real jobs, not just make up hateful blank to sell to lunatics. Another blanking nutcase. Where do they come from? Have you ever noticed that it's the most evil-minded bigots and cranks who call other people antichrist and witches? This guy's a total nutjob. So no problem with BLM leaders calling on spirits of the dead to empower them. No problem with naming names, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, others. No problem with naming their names to call their spirits from the dead to empower the leaders to do their work. No, but to call it out and to call it witchcraft makes me insane and reveals the evil in me. Isn't it wild how the darkness identifies the light as darkness and identifies the darkness as light? It's like going back to the prophet Isaiah in the 5th chapter of his book, woe to those who call evil good and good evil. Here, let's look at some more of the comments. Some posted homosexual comments, just too crude, not even going to put those up, wouldn't dare do. But that got tons of attention and people adding in their foul comments. Others liken this, well, it's just Christian practices or Roman Catholic practices, calling on God, Jesus, or the saints, all of whom are dead or made up to intercede on one's behalf is religion. Got it. How about this? And talking to an invisible being in the sky and asking for favors is madness. So you see how many atheistic responses there are. But then, of course, people are going to bring up Salem witch trials, and others are going to bring in their own witchcraft humor. So look at this. I bet he misses Salem in the witch trials.
Yep, because I expose this, this is what happens. Well, a hex on him. Or how about this? Expletive, you, Mikey, Brown. That was a satanic spell to get Mikey to soil himself. Did it work? Another, seriously, is this clown so ignorant that he actually believes in witches or is just another gifter playing the suckers who are that ignorant? Another, funny how fast Christians went from love thy neighbor as thyself to kill all the witches in a fascist heartbeat. Amazing what power and money does. And another, holdovers from medieval times. These people are the modern equivalents of those who thought burning at the stake saved heretic souls. Now, here's what's so wild. They now have me calling for the burning of witches. You understand how suddenly, and I'm a fascist, and on it goes. And as we have been shouting every way we know how that Black Lives Matter, Black Lives do matter. We stand with our Black brothers and sisters in America, where there's injustice or inequity, we want to confront it together. Where there are the scars of our past, we want to address that together. Where there's not reconciliation, we want to reconcile. But we oppose the BLM movement for these various reasons. Oh, that doesn't matter, and no one's going to get that. What they're going to get is this evil guy. Now, by the way, I'm not complaining. This comes with the territory. And anybody with any platform, media, social media, is going to get hated and attacked. I understand that. And this, to me, is a badge of honor for speaking the truth. What concerns me is the people. I want to help them. I want to reach them. And the way people's minds can be so twisted, that's what concerns me. Okay, others needed to be a little clearer with their threats. So look at this. One says this, yeah, pal, keep it up, and they'll be calling your name. In other words, you're going to be dead soon. That's what you call a threat. Oh, I don't feel personally threatened. But that's what you call a threat. Yeah, pal, keep it up, and they'll be calling your name. So I keep up exposing the evil roots of BLM, and I'll be killed for it. That's what that's saying. How about this? Time to bring the lions back to the Colosseum. They didn't spell Colosseum wrong. That can happen. Time to bring the lions back to the Colosseum for a buffet. Ah, time to eat the Christians. Time to kill and devour the Christians once again. You know, Proposition 8, when that was major, major news in Senator Obama's first campaign for president in 2008, Proposition 8, which said marriage is the union of one man and one woman, and that passed in California. One reason it passed was many Black Americans are conservative in their ethics. They also voted for Barack Obama. And he had lied at that point about his real view on same-sex, quote, marriage. But they helped Black voters that came out in larger numbers, fully understandably, to vote for Barack Obama, fully understandably. They also voted for Prop 8, and it passed. But there were protesters against Prop 8 calling it Prop Hate and also saying, freedom to the lions, time for the lions. So this rhetoric, friends, people may just be posting it online, but a lot of the haters really want to see bad things happen to us as followers of Jesus. That's the reality. That's what happens when you swim against the tide and go against the grain. So be it. Let the Lord be honored. Give us strength
to always do what's right. It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So let's go back to my dialogue with Pastor Rob McCoy and his team. Again, a politically involved pastor who's really challenging other Christians to get involved and to make a difference. This is part of the fireside chat we had joining him and his team by internet.
Chuck Smith and Kay Smith look out at a sea of humanity, and they begin the simple application of teaching the Bible verse by verse, chapter by chapter, book by book. And then they bring in Maranatha music with syncopated rhythms and electric guitars, and it takes off. And you have Costa Mesa, one of the first mega churches. And from 68 to 2020, it's a 52-year span of our life existence of Calvary Chapel. We've experienced 10,000% growth. There's now 1,800 Calvary Chapels around the world. South of Van Nuys, right here in California, there's 350 Calvary Chapels. It's a Calvary Chapel sandbox. The 10, probably many of the 10 largest churches in California are Calvary Chapels, and some of the largest churches in America are Calvary Chapels. But we've been apolitical. The only president that Chuck Smith ever endorsed was Jimmy Carter because he said he was born again. So 52 years of preaching the gospel, that's conversion growth, not transfer growth. People being delivered from drugs. I can go on and on about amazing stories in the movement of God's spirit. And it was charismatic. because we were still aligned with the Vineyard, and you still had Lonnie Frisbee, and people were speaking in tongues, which is, you know, in your wheelhouse. But here we are 52 years into this movement, and let's look at the byproduct of how this has changed the culture in California by being apolitical. We no longer have the fifth largest GDP. We have the sixth, maybe seventh. We have the highest gas tax, sales tax, income tax, corporate tax. We lead the nation in debt. We have the highest poverty, highest homelessness. We're the authors of no-fault divorce that decimated marriage across the country and fatherless families. We are the authors of transgender bathroom bills, the most secularly progressive sex ed curriculum in the world. And here's the kicker. We've aborted more babies in California than the entire population of Canada. So how did that revival change California?
Now, those are great questions. So Pastor Rob McCoy is talking about what happened with the Jesus People movement. This came in the midst of the counterculture revolution of the 60s. So I was pulled in by the counterculture revolution of the 60s, went wholeheartedly into the whole drugs, rock and roll scene. Many of you know my story. And 1971 was radically transformed, became a follower of Jesus at the age of 16 as a Jewish hippie, rock drummer, heroin shooting, LSD using. But the whole drug rock scene, I got caught up in the 60s. But during that time, beginning around 1967, was the birth of what's called the Jesus People Movement or the Jesus Revolution. Read about it, Time Magazine, June of 71. It's an incredible story that just lays out what was happening around the country. Hippies, radicals, rebels, getting radically, dramatically converted, transformed. It was actually happening all over the world. It was a spiritual phenomenon. And Rob McCoy saying that Chuck Smith and his wife Kay, they looked out, saw what was happening. They were traditional pastors, you know, jacket and tie, normal traditional church, sing the hymns. They saw what was happening. They began to bring the young people in. They began to do outreach, and Calvary Chapel exploded because these young people were spiritually searching and looking for spiritual fathers and looking for places to gather together. And it led to this incredible movement of Calvary Chapels with tens of thousands of people genuinely born again, genuinely saved, genuinely coming to faith, genuinely being changed. But like most of our churches, there was kind of an apolitical mentality. In other words, that's a different kingdom. The kingdom of this world, we're of the kingdom of God, and they don't really intersect. They're just kind of parallel and so on. So we don't get involved in politics. It's dirty. It's messy. We don't get involved in cultural issues. Another mentality was, this is the end of the age. Jesus is coming any minute. We'll be out of here any minute. So pretty soon we'll all be out of here. Go back to a lot of the early songs and teachings then, Hal Lindsey's Late Great Planet Earth, which came out in 1970, and the end of the world is here. It's over. We're out of here any second. Why get involved? Plus, the theology was the world's only going to get worse. So the worse it gets, the more it confirms the theology. The more you don't get involved, the worse it gets. You see the cycle. You understand the situation there. So with all the good that Calvary Chapels did, thank God for doing good to this day. Well-known pastors like Greg Laurie and others doing great outreach and doing so much good. I've got fine friends that are Calvary Chapel pastors that love the Lord and have solid churches. At the same time, the mentality that was there and in many of these churches was just, you don't get involved in the political scene. So all these people come to faith, and yet the culture goes down around us, and we're all still here. 50 plus years later, we're still here. Something was wrong with the mentality. Now, Pastor McCoy says something else very challenging. I want to go to one more clip from our dialogue.
When we abdicated our responsibility in the public square, whether it was our eschatology or whatever it was, when we abdicated our responsibility in the public square to engage the culture, and simply saying politics is dirty and I don't want to be a part of it, and the church, I just preach the gospel, I watched something happen. In that picture I gave you of a 52-year decline of California, where more people have left this state than came here during the Dust Bowl, and this was the epicenter of evangelism. And our state is just devastated right now. It's a mess. And they're shuttering churches and censoring what we say. And yet, this is where Focus on the Family came from. This is where, you know, Campus Crusade came from, Bill Bright and James Dobson and the Calvary Movement and the Vineyard Movement. We can go on and on. But here's my struggle. Because we abdicated our participation in the culture and stayed within the walls of the church, and the decline of the family unit, and we didn't defend that, and we allowed public education to take a course, and we never participated, and we surrendered our children to public education, and we embrace divorce as a governor would promote it and devastate marriage across the country. And then families are dissolved and struggling. And you give this depiction of waking up in 2000 as opposed to 1969. And you gave the social barometers. Every social pathology is listed there. This is the kicker. This is where we diverge. The gay and lesbian movement, moving towards Marxism and participating with BLM, I think that's our fault. And I'll tell you why. These are disenfranchised human beings raised in a single parent family or a culture that is driven by sexual deviance. And any political structure for them to participate, they're not permitted in the church. And understandably that you can't hold a leadership position, you can't do this. And the only thing that the church does politically is to define what they don't do. And are you opposed to abortion? You aren't, then you're not in. And here's my point. We have relegated these human beings that struggle with their sexual identity, that they can only embrace the leftist theology.
So really, really interesting point from someone involved politically who is also a pastor caring about people. It is that with the shift that we had in our culture from the 60s until today, again, as psychologist David Meyer pointed out years ago, if you fell asleep in the year 1960 and woke up in the year 2000, you'd wake up to the divorce rate doubled, teen suicide tripled, reported violent crime up 4 times, prison population up 5 times, children born out of wedlock up 6 times, people living together out of wedlock up 7 times. Just those last couple of factors, that massively impacts the society. That massively impacts the younger generation growing up. And often what the church has said is you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. And people have gotten an idea, stay away or leave. If you're raised in the church, leave. We don't want your type here. That's what people have heard. Rather than a compassionate voice saying, we understand that you grew up in a broken home. We understand that you were raised in a very alienating environment in terms of your view of God and the gospel. And yes, these are our values. And yes, we believe God's ways are best. Yes, we believe God made men for women and women for men. Yes, we believe all these things. At the same time, because we believe God's ways are best, we're here to show you mercy, compassion, grace, to stand with you as people who care about you. We're not your enemies. We're your friends. So come and listen. Come and sit with us. Get to know us. I was asked by a pastor to speak to his congregation, probably about 900 people, on Sunday morning, and to deal with Can You Be Gay and Christian. He said, but please address the transgender issue also. And I said, you bet. And as I was speaking, I said, so what do you do if a man comes into your building wearing a dress, carrying a Bible? What do you do? I said, have him out to lunch. Now, if you've got little kids, that could be confusing for them. But otherwise, just, hey, have him out for lunch. Love on him. He texted me a few weeks later. He said, Dr. Brown, it happened just like you said. And of course, our people are loving, and we loved on this guy, and then we found out afterwards from some of the ladies that he went to use the ladies' bathroom. What do we do if that happens again? Thought about it, chatted with my wife, Nancy. I said, you know, when he walks in the door, one of the pastors greet him, one of the ushers greet him, say, we're so glad you're here. We're so glad you're here. And listen, we don't want you to be uncomfortable or the ladies to be uncomfortable. If at any point you need to use the restroom, I'll be back here. Just look for me. We'll bring you over to the pastor's private office. Just try to reach out, meet someone where they are, and then bring them to Jesus to find wholeness. So as we stand for righteousness, as we swim against the tide of the culture and go against the grain of the spirit of the age, yes, you'll be hated, vilified, rejected, mocked. So be it. Bring it on. It's for righteousness. And hey, look what happened to our Savior. At the same time, be known as people who love. When you cut us, we bleed love. Not just that we love one another, but we love those who differ with us, we love those who oppose us, and we're willing to lay our lives down for their well-being. Friends, that's the gospel, right? Visit my website, askdrbrown.org.